I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence but committed no crime. And bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my shackles and kicked in my face, but I've come through. And I need to go home.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the Cubs podcast that is 1-0 in its existence, with the Cubs winning the World Series every year we've done the podcast. So
I think that's no accident.
I mean, there's no small sample size issues there. It's just straight up analytics. Can't argue with it. My name is Carlos Porta Carrero. I am joined by Isaac Bennett, Joel Reese, Ryan Davis. This is the day after. It happened. The Cubs are World Series champions, beating the Indians in what can only be described as a ridiculous emotional roller coaster of epic proportion. That being said, let's get into talking about this game and everything that happened. I should say, I think we're going to get a nice variety of perspectives here, because Joel and I were actually at the game, and I realized after the fact, after we looked at all the tweets and all the stuff on Facebook, that, you know, we missed a lot because we weren't watching the broadcast. So I think Isaac and Ryan will have that part covered, and we can give a little color as to what it was like to stand there and witness this game. I wanted to start with Fowler. It's right at the beginning, first hitter. We had talked about this a lot. I mean, everybody had discussed that, you know, the Cubs needed to get ahead early so that it wasn't just Kluber to Miller to Allen. And he came out and hit that home run, and that really set the tone for what we can call the first third of the game, where it was, hey, it looks like this might happen and they might win it all. So I wanted to get your thoughts on how you felt going leading up to the game. I know we discussed a little bit the anxiety and the tension and the knots in our stomachs. But Ryan, how were you feeling leading up to the game, and did that Dexter Fowler home run help loosen some of those knots for you, as it did for me?
Well, I struggle with just everyday anxiety.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh at that.
Yeah. Stop laughing at my mental health issues, Carlos. Yeah, no, I struggle with anxiety as a just an everyday thing. So watching that game and going into that game, my stomach was in knots. You know, if I held my hand straight out and tried to hold it flat, it would be shaking. So it was difficult enough for me as it was. The Fowler home run felt great, but immediately after it was like, okay, it's just one run. There's no chance one run wins this game. So I immediately pretty much went right back into butterflies in the stomach. But you just can't say enough about the way that this game went. It's too difficult to put into words the entire thing. I know we're just starting off talking about the Fowler home run, and we're taking this kind of one step at a time here, but it's almost impossible to do that. That game and the way it ended, I think we kind of talked about it before the podcast, and I said that was the way they finished that off was the most 2016 Cubs way to win a game I have ever seen.
Yeah, I thought it was really, you know, if you think about it, like the heroes, I mean, you know, Bryant made some great plays, some great base running. I couldn't believe he scored on that, you know, what was almost basically a pop-up to center field. I couldn't believe he scored on that. I think that was the second run. But the heroes of the of the last, you know, the last inning were, I mean, let's go down the list. It was Schwarber, who didn't play the whole season. Albert Almora with some great base running. And then Zobrist. And then Miguel Montero. So these were, it was not like, you know, Russell or Bryant or Rizzo, like the big names. It was like, you know, smaller contributions by guys who were a little off the radar. And that was what made it so cool. I mean, you know, if Bryant's ball had left the field, that would have been amazing, obviously. But I thought it was really cool that it was guys who were a little, you know, off the beaten path, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. And just to go back to Fowler, I wrote in my recap, which I posted on Twitter, I wrote in my recap about how sort of transcendent the fact that he was the first African-American to hit a home run for the Cubs in the World Series in history, and the first African-American to score a run as well for the Cubs. So I really focused on that in my game four recap. So when he came out and hit that home run to lead off the game, I was fighting a few different emotions. One of them was just a huge amount of joy for a player that's brought me whole amount of fun and moments these last 2 years. I've really appreciated having him. And the second was this overwhelming foreboding feeling of Devin Hester. And I know that's very Joel-like of me, but I could not shake Devin Hester. You are ridiculous. I could not shake it. And in that moment, it felt so similar, so similar. And I was just praying that this team was not guided by Rex Grossman, and that this team was guided by players that we trusted a whole heck of a lot more than Rex Grossman. So thankfully it did, but that was the first moment of just a rampant emotion for me in that game.
You know, it's funny that you say that you referenced my negativity, because first of all, I missed that homer. I was getting beers.
Because
the game started at like, it's supposed to start, you know, it started a couple minutes early, and I'd forgotten that, you know, it was like, instead of, that was the big joke, instead of 7:08, it started at 7. I was like, oh, thanks for moving the time up 8 minutes, MLB. So I, you know, I'm coming back to my seat. I've got two beers. I'm just about to turn the corner to my seat, and then the crowd erupts. I'm like, oh, what did I miss? But secondly, I had a very different reaction at homer. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to win. This is it. That run alone might stand up. And I think they're going to win this game. Like, I went totally optimistic. I went totally back to Montana. I was like, this is it. That was the game right there. Cause they're not going to score another run. It's going to be at least 1-0. So, yeah, I mean, I just, what an amazing, I think it was huge, Carlos. I think that's a great point that you made, that it really kind of set the tone. It was like, okay, this guy is not invincible. He's not, you know, Bumgarner, robotic, you know, man of steel. He's vulnerable. And I think that kind of certainly opened the door a little bit and probably made the rest of the guys say, hey, you know, we can get to this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so hard to even put all of this into words. What you just said, I'm just trying to like continue to put it all together. I don't know. This is just a moment that I'd been waiting a really long time for. You guys had waited your whole lives for. I guess I just have to ask you guys this. You came into this feeling as a Cubs fan, watching other teams, you know, the Florida Marlins and the Anaheim Angels and the Cardinals and, you know, all these other teams win the World Series and think, yeah, their fans are enjoying that, but when the Cubs do it, I will enjoy it so much more. It will mean so much more to me. And the payoff will be so much bigger. Did it end up that way for you? Cause I think it ended up that way for me. We talked before about, you know, whether we, you know, how we were worried about how we would react if they won, whether it would be fulfilling enough. It 100% was for me. What about you guys, Isaac?
Yeah, Ryan, it's interesting that you say that, because this is one of the things I wanted to touch on that I've been very touched by. Just even actually through this whole run, I've had hundreds of people come out and sincerely congratulate me and sincerely talk about how, you know, maybe they were Cardinals fans and they weren't necessarily rooting for the team, for the Cubs. They knew I wouldn't want them to root for the Cubs, but however, they were rooting for me. They were rooting for my happiness and my joy and all of these things. And that was all summed up really, really well today for me when a friend of mine, a different friend of mine named Ryan, a huge Cardinals fan, just the purest Cardinals fan you could ever imagine, in that he bleeds red. He texted me late or early this morning and said he'd be smiling for days thinking of me, seeing the video of me screaming, "Yeah, baby," over and over and over again. He told me that. And then I said, "You know, thanks, bro. I know you know how special this is for me." And he said, "Actually, man, I don't. I don't know how this feels, because I've seen championships and I've enjoyed them." He said, "But you've waited your entire life for this, plus born the history of 80 years before you were born. And this puts that in a category that I don't think I can ever experience." And he said, "Based on that assumption, I'm actually jealous of you." And I said, "You know what? You might be right. You might be right that this is just different. This is different, and we can go to being normal fans now. We can stop being the cursed children. We can stop being the losers. We can stop being all these things that, you know, we sort of associated with, and we can be fans." He said, "I bet. I bet. I'm happy for you, and I hope that you can just enjoy the next several years of what could be a dynasty, and you can enjoy seeing that be built." So that kind of summed it all up for me, was all the people that reached out and just the overwhelming emotion and highs and lows of that game and everything that it was. It was everything and more that I could have ever dreamt or imagined that it would be, and it fulfilled so much for me.
Those are all good points, Isaac. And what you said there makes me think of two things. Number one, I cannot tell you how glad I am to be done with that lovable losers narrative. And I hear people like Jason Goff on the Square saying that Cubs fans liked that and they reveled in that narrative and that image. I hated it. I never wanted it. I always wanted them to win, except when I was little and it didn't even dawn on me that they would win. But ever, you know, my whole life, for the most part, I was like, I just want them to be good. I don't want them to be little cute bears that are innocuous and then get the crap kicked out of them all the time. And you're the National League doormat and the butt of everyone's jokes. I hated that. So I totally agree that, you know, now we can just be, we can sit at the big boys table. But I guess that I don't know if we want to get into it now, but I mean, it was totally euphoric. I did not stay euphoric though. Optimistic.
Shocking. Shocking.
When Ranjay Davis hit that homer, I went to a deep, dark place.
I did too.
It was I don't know. We don't have to get into it yet. I mean, or if we can, we want to, I don't know, but I'm operating about 3 hours of sleep, guys, by the way, so you'll have to forgive me if the synapses don't quite connect.
You actually sound better than normal.
Yeah, I also got about 3 hours and down most of a bottle of champagne, so nice, don't feel too bad.
You, for breakfast, you mean, like this morning?
Well, I did finish drinking it at 3:45.
So yeah, technically. Let's stay on the euphoria for a little bit longer. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a real sucker for like those videos of people celebrating.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I cry like a little bitch when I see those things. And there's a woman who I don't have the Twitter up in front of me. I can call it up and maybe we can post it on the Twitter feed or something. But this woman's like 81-year-old or 83-year-old grandfather, and he like starts crying, and I absolutely lose it. So I'm staring right now on my dining room table as the Tribune with Anthony Rizzo getting serious airtime. He's got serious hops with Bryant and Montgomery and Baez and Russell, and it's just amazing, you know.
Before we go and start really digging into the mechanics of this game, I guess I want to, you know, we don't have unlimited time, but we have some time to talk. I want to get into the meta of the Cubs winning the World Series a little deeper. How does this affect, you talked about it, Joel, with you know, we get to be fans now. And maybe it was Isaac. We get to be fans. We don't have to be lovable losers anymore, which we all kind of hate that title. But you know, there was a really good piece in the SB Nation Cardinals blog, Viva Alberto's, today, where it basically said that the smug superiority of the Cardinals over the Cubs is officially gone. And the writer, Alex, I forget his last name, but it was very well done. And he basically said that's the way it should be. You know, this is, as much as it kind of stings for Cardinals fans, The 1908 jokes are gone, and this is, you know, a real competitive rivalry, which is what it really should be. And I just think after reading that and seeing it come from a place that is not a fan of the Cubs, is a fan of their rival, basically admitting that the smug superiority is gone. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, that's game changing. What about you guys, Isaac? How are you envisioning the way things change? I mean, it's just nothing is the same anymore for the Cubs.
No, nothing is the same. And I think one of the things that I'm looking forward to the most is enjoying the rivalry with the Cardinals for the rivalry's sake, rather than sort of, hey, the Cubs are the whipping boy of this team, and it's always a joke, and we're always going to point back to the amount of titles. And, you know, Cardinals fans always had 1908 on the tip of their tongues to refute anything that was ever said. And there's no reason to ever bow to that ever again. And they're going to actually have to step up to the plate and give legitimate counter arguments to things, rather than just resting on their laurels of how long it's been. And I think what I felt today, I didn't feel any angst or anger or like sort of sense of superiority over the Cardinals or over any other rival or anybody like that, the White Sox, anything like that. I just felt joy. I just felt relief flood over my entire being. And I felt, you know, many, many, many decades of suffering for a lot of people that I care about fall away, and nothing mattered. And now it's just about being able to enjoy games without anxiety and without, you know, sort of the lows sending me into throes of depression and things of that nature. And it was just like, it just flooded over me. And I think it forever changed the relationship between the Cubs and the Cardinals. I think it forever changed the relationship between the Cubs and baseball. And I think it's tremendously good for baseball that this happened, because I've had so many people just reach out to me and tell me how they saw the game in an entirely new light, just with the joy that this team played with and the resiliency that they played with and all of these wonderful intangibles that there are. And people saw the game for what I see it as. And I really believe that this is a line of demarcation for me in my fanhood, and maybe in my analytical career as well, and just the way I can see the game through a lens that is much clearer and much less maybe pessimistic or something of that nature. So that's what it did for me.
So I was going to say is jumping on when and hearing Isaac talking about emotions, to me, that's where I wanted to go the podcast, because it's really the game is about emotions and the emotions we have, the highs, the lows, and the emotions we share with other people. It's kind of what makes being a fan so great and so difficult. And I thought a lot about how I was going to feel if the Cubs did win it all. This has been going on for weeks now. Oh, am I going to jump up and down? Am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? Trying to picture and visualize what my reaction was going to be, which made it all feel so like artificial. But anyway, mm-hmm. when it finally did happen, I was surprised. I jumped up and then I stopped. And the people I was with, complete strangers, mind you, complete strangers that I was hugging and holding onto for dear life, I noticed we all did the same thing. We went from a second of jumping for joy, and then we got very quiet. And one guy just couldn't speak. I put my hands on my head, and I realized I didn't have the scream in me. I didn't have the jumping up and down. I couldn't believe it. And I'm not, I hate talking about curses. I hate talking about the 108 years. I always said, I don't care. I'm 35 years old. That doesn't have anything to do with me. My grandfather wasn't a fan, and you know, I didn't know people that suffered and suffered and suffered. So I thought all that stuff was outside of me, wasn't relevant to me other than me being a Cubs fan. But when that moment happened and I stopped jumping and I quieted down and I couldn't believe what was happening, all that stuff just bubbled up to the surface, and it hit me, you know? And it was the ultimate feeling of, oh my God, all this stuff, all this garbage that I really don't have no interest in discussing, it's been there. No matter how much I'm like, oh, I don't care about that, I don't care about that, it was there. It's been there the whole time. And this was it coming out and just being it was a delicious feeling.
I really want to be able to tell this story, because this is, this podcast is one of the few remaining places that I get to really let my fan flag fly. That's a difficult sentence to say.
You pulled it off though. Good job.
Yeah, easy to slip up, but you know, because you know, writing and trying, you know, very hard to become, you know, credentialed, which, you know, I have in certain instances. You know, you really get told, and I've been told many places, you really have to hide your fandom. Don't post pictures of yourself wearing, you know, Cub stuff. Don't actively root for the team on Twitter, you know, that kind of stuff. And I've tried very hard to ramp that back. So this is one of the few last places I really get to let that out. And so I'll tell the story. After the final out, I went and got my daughter up out of bed and told her that the Cubs won. First thing she says to me is, "Wow, do they get to spray champagne?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, they do." And so I got her up, and she was, you know, kind of like wrapped around me. She's 5 years old, so you know, she's kind of like wrapped her arms around my neck and her legs around, you know, my waist. And we walk out, and I sat down on the floor in front of the TV, and she just got this big smile on her face. And then we started hearing fireworks, and my wife, Kara, took her outside to go watch the fireworks. And I just sat there on my knees looking at the TV, and my eyes welled up with tears, and I just sobbed like a little baby watching what was going on the TV in front of me. And I just, it was that moment that, you know, that moment that you just qualifies everything that we've ever hoped for in what we're doing. It was all realized in that moment, and it was the biggest emotional high I've ever had in my life.
Wow. Wow. I don't know if I can quite equal that, but yeah, I will just say I had pretty much convinced myself that they were not going to win. And I think in our text messages,
Matt, no,
I think
I will have to, can I, if you want me to read the text messages before or after you let me know, but I have some texts I have to read from you.
Why don't you do it like now, so we can then be
all right
under the happy train.
Okay, here we go. There's four texts back to back to back. I didn't even have a chance to respond. My initial text to Joel is, "Goddamn, you guys can imagine what happened. It was at 10:02 p.m. Here comes Joel. Such overmanagement. Oh shit, dude. I can't effing believe it. The last one is, the Cubs are not winning this game."
See how the heights of euphoria to the bottom of despair. And I just, yeah, I was like, I went for, after it happened, and then he got out of the inning, and then the rain delay started. When the rain delay started, I went to go to the bathroom, and the line was ridiculously long. So I walked to another bathroom, and I was like, it was like the slowest, most agonizing walk. And people were like, getting in my face, like, "Yeah, blah, where's your lead now? 1908, whatever. And I was like, I had nothing to say. I couldn't like form words. The ability to verbalize had left my person. And then when they came back and they scored two runs, and then that last play, I thought that last play, I don't know about you guys, like I was even until the end, and that last play, I thought that's going to be a hit. I thought that's going to be a little infield dribbler like Corey Kluber's. Because, you know, based on our angle, maybe watching TV, maybe it was obvious, but from where we were, it looked like it went like 6 feet from the plate. And so, and then Bryant got it and threw him, and it was like, oh my God, it happened. Like, and it seemed like it was going to happen, and then it wasn't, and then it did. You're like, it's etched in stone and there's no going back. And I high-fived, I hugged, I cried, it was everything I would have hoped. I don't know, there's quite the pinnacle moment of my life, like Ryan said, but it was certainly up there.
Man, if that wasn't the pinnacle moment, Joel, there's some moments that we're going to need to talk about. So no, but I'm with you guys. I think that well, my brother flew in from Houston for games 4 through 7, and You know, we just watched them all on TV together with most of my family. Game five, we were up in Chicago after I taped on CLTV and watched in a bar up there, which was fun. But, you know, we spent a long time before game seven talking about what it meant to our family and specifically what it meant towards his and my relationship towards our dad. And that's kind of what we had growing up. And certainly baseball is where we found the most commonality and still do. And I think I resonate with what Carlos was saying about, I spent a lot of time worrying about whether or not I could fully encapsulate that moment and appreciate it for what it was. And rounds of that game, there was never a moment in that series that I believed the Cubs would lose until Rajay Davis hit that home run. And when Rajay Davis hit that home run and Joe Maddon decided he wanted to continue being the worst game manager in the history of the world and leave Chapman out there, I thought that the Cubs were going to lose the game for the first time. I did. I was texting Joel and trying to keep Joel sane. And I was telling him, nope, everything's fine. You're wrong. We're good. Sit close to me. But
don't jump.
Deep down in my soul, I was feeling something different. And they pulled it out. They pulled it out. And decades of emotions flooded over me. It was incredible. And, you know, I had to go back and I had to look at my signed sporting news from Ron Santo that when I was up in the booth with him when I turned 16, you know, he signed for me and couldn't have been any kinder. And that was my last lasting memory of Ron. And you know, to tell him that I missed him and I wish he was there with us. And that brought me to tears. And so many other things brought me to tears. And my sister telling me what Sammy Sosa meant to her brought me to tears. And there was just so many things. And it really bridged a lot of gaps for me emotionally and, you know, just in my family and everything like that. So, impact from this game, but at the end of it all, I'm going to know that the game was more than I could have ever asked. And it took me to places I didn't know existed in my soul. And the finality and the emotion that swept over me was a once in a lifetime experience. I truly believe that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that this is pretty much equal to what the Red Sox fans felt in 2004. They won it again in 07 and 2013, and I'm sure any Red Sox fan will tell you how great that was as individual events, but nothing will ever compare to that first time. And I think that's what we got to experience. Carlos, I think you were going to go next, but maybe we should start talking about the actual game and some of our feelings about what happened, some of the moves.
Yeah, no, I mean, the last thing I wanted to piggyback off of what Isaac said in terms of the swings of where he finally thought, okay, now I think we're going to lose. I think that Fowler home run, you know, I went into the game nervous, whatever, neutral, 0-0, game just started. That home run, you know, if you were to chart it with the win probability charts that we use sometimes, it'd be like, oh, okay, just a little jump in the Cubs' direction. It's a great way to start, okay. And then that little seed kind of grew into, you know, a little sprout over here. Okay, got a little bit better. Okay, now they have a 2-run lead. And then, oh, well, they scored. Well, we scored some more runs. Okay, 6-3. And being in that stadium, being surrounded by all these people, you could feel that every single person in that stadium, Cleveland fans, Chicago fans, they were all feeling the Cubs are going to win this game. You could feel that this was something that was going to happen. And everybody had it, and you could see the tension in the Indians fans. And you could, like, I had this really drunk Cubs fan next to me that the cops eventually took away before he missed the end of the game because he was being a jerk. But he was screaming. He was verbalizing this little seed of a feeling that everybody had. And if you're a Cubs fan, you're just like, I know, man, but shut up. Don't put that out into the world. Like, we gotta keep it to ourselves right now. And the Indians fans, of course, are like, you really need to shut up because this is not what we want to hear. But then when Rajay Davis hit that home run, this was the only play of the whole game where I said, oh, I'm going to take a little video. I'm here at the stadium. This is great. Game seven. I'm going to take a little video. I took a little video, and here's what you see in the video is Chapman throws, boom, there's the ball. The phone tries to track where the ball goes, and it's kind of shaky. And then it finds exactly where the ball goes. The stadium explodes. It starts to shake, and the camera goes to the floor. And why is that? Because I was on my knees, just like broken. And I stood up. I was the guy, what was that, Michigan, University of Michigan football game, where the guy was just like
Appalachian State. Yeah.
That was me, but every single person around me was just jumping and mosh pitting me and elbowing me. And some people were doing it on purpose. Some people were doing it accidentally, but they were it. A couple people were in my face going, ah, germ. Everybody felt, they were like, no, it's not have a momentum. You guys, we got you. And that moment was just all those, oh, the Cubs always find a way. Oh, the Cubs. That's when I got fearful. And that line that had, oh, good Cubs, the probability chart, boom, all the way down to the other side. And before I finish this, I must say, Cleveland Indians fans, amazing people. Very
so
nice. Very
yeah.
respectful.
So nice.
Yeah.
You always have a jerk or two here or there, but overall, these people were fantastic. And I feel horrible that they had to go through that experience and be on the other end of it, because I can't even imagine.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it too after it was over and I had processed. I was like, man, poor Cleveland fans. I mean, I even looked at my wife and I was just like, you know, you could say a lot of things about a lot of teams as a fan and, oh, I hate this player, or oh, I hate this team, or these fans can go suck eggs. But I looked at my wife and I said, you know, if the Indians are back in the playoffs next year, I will root for them in any round where they are not facing the Cubs with my entire heart. And she said, oh, I feel the exact same way. It's just like a, you know, that we know that feeling. And the Indians now, I mean, they've been to the World Series three times since 1995. They've lost all three, two of them in very heartbreaking game sevens. And these fans now have that longest Major League Baseball drought since 1948. So, yeah, my heart goes out to Cleveland fans. Their team played very well. They deserve to win, you know, almost every bit as much as the Cubs deserve to win the series. And you know, they have a ton of likable players. They have the best manager in the game. There's just not anything to dislike about Cleveland. It's easy to watch your team win the World Series, I think, if you're playing against a team that's kind of like hard or easy to root against, but I don't know, it was very difficult to root against the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, and their players too, right? I just felt like there wasn't a single moment in that series where I felt that they showed the Cubs up, even when they were ahead 3-1 or anything of that nature. I saw so much professionalism out of their players, and I really grew to like, but how can you not love Frankie Lindor? And I thought Jason Kipnis really showed himself really well in interviews, and I thought he handled himself with a lot of class. And there was just nothing about that team that could make me hate them, which, you know, in some ways sort of took the David Goliath thing out of it. And I liked that because it just came down to my best versus your best, my fastball versus your power cut, my tactical move, my bullpen move versus your bullpen move, which Tito wiped the floor with Joe on that one. And all of these different things. But, you know, I just think that it was, I gained so much respect for the entire organization and the players themselves on an individual basis. There was just nothing about it that I didn't love. And, the Indians were a big part of that.
Well, I think Ryan's right. I think we should try to talk a little bit about the game at least, cause there's a lot in there, so we can't cover everything, but, let's start with Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks went out there and just, I wrote down my notes, cold-blooded killer with an A at the end, which is even more cold-blooded.
Yeah, that's seriously cold.
So, I mean, fantastic pitching by him. You know, the offense, so many contributors, and somebody wrote an article, I forgot who it was, about how this was a team effort. And really, that came across with all the different contributions. You know, there's so many things here, so maybe we each pick a play that we want to kind of highlight especially or discuss or something that really like stuck with you. Joel, I don't know if there's one play that you want to kind of single out.
Yeah, I kind of alluded to it before, but to me, I mean, I went into just complete naive optimism. Like, as soon as Fowler hit it, I was like, oh my God, we're going to win this game. And then they tied it up and I was like, well, okay. And then they tied it up in the bottom of the third. And then right the next inning, the top of the fourth, Bryant singles, Rizzo gets hit by a pitch. Bryant goes to third on a grounder from Zobrist, and then Russell popped up, and I was like, oh, that's too bad. Damn it. There's not even going to advance the runner. And so it didn't, I was like looking away. Maybe I don't know if I was texting or something. And then the next thing you know, Bryant is sprinting home. And I was like, what the hell? And he scored. I couldn't believe it. I was like, that is so ballsy. And it was like, to me, that was the key play. And then on the next at bat, Contreras hit a double, scoring Zobrist. So, and that was obviously key too. But to me, Brian scoring, that was like, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the wild card game against the Pirates last year, where Fowler led off with a single, stole second, and then Schwarber singled him home. And it was like with that steal, I was like, they're going for it. They are, you know, trying to put their foot on the throat. And that's what it felt like to me, is them really going for it. And I thought that was so awesome. And it really, to me, it kind of put Cleveland back on their heels. Like that and the next two run, when it was 3-1, I was like, wow, that feels like more than 3-1. It's like you said, Carlos, like at a certain point, it almost, you know, and this is maybe me projecting, but I felt like it was like almost a foregone conclusion. I felt maybe not that strong, but I did feel like there was a really, really big shift in momentum. And that play to me really opened the door for it.
It did for me, Joel, as well. And I when the ball went in the air, I was screaming from the beginning, tag, 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 tag. Because I didn't figure that center. He was in center, correct?
Who was it? You broke up for a second.
Rajay Davis was in center.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I knew, and everything is foggy now, but I knew that Davis's arm in center was suboptimal. And I was screaming tag at about 4 inches in front of the TV as people were screaming at me to get out of the way of the TV. And when he took off, and we had synced the radio, and Pat shared your surprise, Joel, because Pat goes, "And Bryant's going," or something of that nature, mm-hmm. where he was stunned by it. And it felt like a turning point in the game, whether or not he was out or safe. And I saw that throw coming in high, and I thought, he's in. And it ended up being a close play, but just incredible instincts by Bryant, incredible base running all the way around, just phenomenal, phenomenal. And I would say that beyond that, the play that got me is a very similar play, but it was in the 10th inning, mm-hmm. after Schwarber, you know, led off with that single, which, I mean, how much can we say about Kyle Schwarber? What an incredible guy. But he leads off, and I didn't want Joe to pinch run because I didn't want to lose the opportunity for him to hit again.
Yeah, I
should
agree.
The game go on. But you know what? He did it, and Almora came in, and it was pretty special for me. Like I mentioned last night on Twitter, Almora was my first professional interview, and he just treated me so, so well. And I've been cheering for him so hard ever since. I always have anyway. But the heads-up play on that deep fly ball by Bryant, which looked like it might go off the wall or go over the fence, where maybe the book says go halfway or go all the way to second and be ready to score on a double. He didn't. He read it so well. He got back to first in time to tag and bust his butt to second and slide in safely. What an incredibly fundamental play by a 22-year-old guy, you know, and he told me back in April, he said, I want my instincts, the instincts that I play defense with, I need those to translate to the base paths. And as I saw that play happen, I thought Albert Almora's instincts just translated to the base paths, just like he told me he was going to work on. And wow, what a play. And it paid off. And loved seeing that from Almora in that moment.
Yeah, when you guys in our group text, I think you all kind of shared the same angst over pinch running for Schwarber. I loved the move at the time. I thought that if they had wanted to, it could have set them up for a big inning where Joe could have brought in Jorge Soler to pinch hit for Hayward and then move Almora out of the DH spot to right field for Hayward, you know, in the bottom half of the inning, you know, to get the final three outs. You lose the DH, but at that point you're up, you know, two or more runs. So you're really just trying to close it out. I thought that it could have been a really good big move to really open up the game. And then as it stands, you know, obviously Almora scores a run, whereas, you know, we just don't know what would have happened with with Schwarber running on the bases, not able to tag up, maybe not able to come around from second to score. You know, who knows, maybe he gets thrown out at some point. So it was a really big move. I liked it at the time. I thought it was the right thing to do to try and get those runs on the board and steal the game. And that's exactly what they did. It was probably one of just a small handful of things that Joe Maddon did that I actually agreed with. I think we all are pretty much in agreement here that Terry Francona managed circles around Joe Maddon in this series, which is not something I would have expected coming in. I know Maddon has made some kind of head scratching in-game moves before, and we all just kind of say, well, he's Joe Maddon and it always seems to work out, and it worked out here. But right. There are so many moments where it's like, you know, you're playing a video game against a guy who has no idea what he's doing, and he, you know, puts a, you know, starting pitcher into a game in the video game 2 days after the pitcher pitched, and then throws him for three innings, and then brings in the closer, and the closer gives up a ton of runs, and he sends him back out there anyway. It's like, and you're playing, just like, what is this guy doing? Does he, what, I don't understand. That's what it was like. That's exactly like the moves that that Joe Maddon made. I mean, when Chapman came back out for the bottom of the ninth, you're just like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, Joe? Like, this is an insane hill to die on in this moment, and you're going to do it. And fortunately, Chapman threw his 96 mile an hour fastball because he had absolutely nothing left, and he threw a slider. I think at some point he threw a cutter. I mean, he threw the kitchen sink at the Cleveland Indians and got him out. And then in the 10th inning, after the rain delay and the long rally, he didn't have Edwards warming right away. He had him kind of standing in the bullpen. And the thoughts just came into my head, like the TV showed Edwards just standing there, not even warming. And then it showed Chapman sitting on the bench. And I was like, no, Joe Maddon, you don't do this to us. How could he possibly bring him in for another inning? And then of course he didn't.
Yeah. I thought the same thing too. So,
but yeah, well, there was so much that was a head scratcher.
You know, you mentioned Chapman, and this is something that I kind of wanted to bring up. I guess I'll count it as my play, but such a controversial figure on this team. I mean, I know I was picturing while he was, you know, that those last couple innings before the Rajay Davis home run, I was thinking of something Isaac said when he was acquired about if he's on the mound and he seals the deal on a Cubs World Series title, it will have reduced my happiness by a certain measure. And I was thinking about these things, and I'm hearing the chanting of, you know, I think it was like wife beater or something. And I'm trying to divorce myself. This is very tricky, but I'm trying to divorce myself from the person that he is and talk strictly about the player. And what he went through as the player is just horrible, right? That little germ that I was talking about, that certainty of a win, of all the history of this team that he just was a hired gun on. But, you know, he's built some camaraderie with these people, and he blew it for them. He blew it for them. And when I read later, I mean, I didn't know this at the time, but I was screaming up there, he's just throwing sliders. He's got nothing. He's throwing slider after slider after slider. Get him out of there. And I was angry at Chapman, and I was like, I don't care. Burn his arm. We don't have him next year. Who cares? And the next day when I read the story during the rain delay that it was him and Addison Russell that were basically crying because they let go of this lead and that certainty was no more. And it looked like it had been completely inverted. I felt sad for the man. And so when I read that Hayward, you know, took control and did something, I mean, here's a guy that went 0-for-5, struck out once and left five men on base. And we've been destroying this guy in our podcast over and over and over for his offensive, you know, lack of results. And here he goes and he does this thing that we cannot quantify. That we can only create this fantastic narrative that he charged everybody up, and it's because of the words that he said during that rain delay that they went out there and they believed in themselves again and rah rah. But he did this for the team, and I don't know. After they won, I was looking at all the replays, and I was keeping a very close eye on Chapman, because last night when Joel and I got back to where we were staying, and it was 3 a.m, we just couldn't sleep, and we were looking at highlights. I was like, oh, you see, where's Chapman? I bet you he's already like on the bus going to talk to his agent about getting his big contract. He doesn't care. But there he was. He was elated because the player Chapman had just gone through what the fans went through on a whole other scale. I mean, this was something that the franchise to maybe blame some of it on Madden, but it was on his left arm that that ball left the ballpark. And when all that ended up getting resolved, my view of Chapman now is, you know, on your way. Thanks for playing. You helped the team. We will not see you again, I don't think. But I felt a little bit of gladness for him that he did not have that on his shoulders. And it's very hard to say that because of the person that he is, but trying to stick to the player, that was something that I was feeling.
Well, and you referenced something there that I want to touch on, Carlos. And I did say that. I said that my preference was for somebody to get the last out, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was divine providence that there was a rain shower or not there, but it took a complete implosion from Aroldis Chapman, which I'm not celebrating. I don't want anybody to take this away. I'm not that trite of a person. I never will be. I'm not celebrating his implosion, but it took him imploding on the mound. It took a rain shower. It took the most devastating collapse in a game I've ever witnessed in sports history. It took an 0-for-5 guy rallying a bunch of kids in a locker room as it's raining like it's, you know, Bronco League. And it took a bunch of unlikely characters coming back and showing incredible resiliency to do that in the 10th inning and put some runs across the board. It took all of these things. And at the end of the day, it was Mike Montgomery and Carl Edwards, guys on the mound that from everything that I know deserved to be out there, and guys that got the final out. And it was Dan Vogelbach. You know, it was all the work that Dan Vogelbach put in to get himself in shape, to be a legitimate hitter in the major leagues, to be trade value worthy, to get a guy like Mike Montgomery to come in and do that. It was all these things that crescendoed into one to make it a moment, which was somebody other than Aroldis Chapman being on the mound. And I think a lot of people felt the same way, that that was important. It was important that that went down that way. And I am forever grateful for whatever reason, for where, you know, why ever that happened. I'm grateful that that's what happened. So I feel you on everything there. I don't have any spite towards Aroldis Chapman. I believe in grace through and through for people. I hope he has turned his life around. But look, I'm also very grateful that that ended the way it did. I will make no bones about that and not back away from what I said.
I also thought that as much as I didn't like seeing the Indians come back, I really would have loved a 10-1 game. That would just, you know, the final three innings felt like a coronation, you know, to something inevitable. I would have loved for that to have happened, but I don't think that was in the cards for this team. I, you know, going down 3-1 and having to win their final three games and then going into game seven as a do or die, I don't think that was ever going to be something that this team did. And if we want to talk, you know, if we want to wax poetic about it, the way this game finished was very much the 2016 Cubs in a nutshell. Just the, you know, they brought out the bats. You've got the emotional David Ross home run in his final plate appearance as a major league ball player. You've got, you know, Lester doing a big thing. You've got Joe Maddon making an inexcusable mistake. You've got, you know, everything. You've got the blown lead from the bullpen.
You've got Joel going to the bathroom in the middle of a very important moment.
And before and before the game, I mean,
it wasn't in the middle, Carlos.
You
know,
next time you get a big ticket, just give it to Ryan or me, and we will actually fully appreciate it. You're busy hanging out with Wilco in the bathroom.
Joel blacked out the last half of the, and I don't mean anything to do with alcohol. He could not remember. I don't understand what happened. How did the run score? What, I was watching the whole thing, but I don't know what happened.
I didn't. Seriously, no. I went to such, like, I literally, I mean, we don't have to keep talking about this, but after Davis's home, I sat down and I looked like, you know, okay, here, bad actor, portray grief. And that's what I looked like, you know, like I had my head in my hands. I remember looking at the ground. And there was this really, really annoying woman who was next to us, who was like waving her towel and yelling, and, you know, and I was fine with it, whatever, when we were winning. But then she got like even louder and just like right in my ear. And I just like, I just couldn't. And I just, as Carlos read my very eloquent text, I just was like, I saw no way for them to win. And so then watching it happen, like watching them come back from that, it just seemed unreal. It just seemed like I was watching something like disembodied from it, because I was like, I can't believe this. And so, you know, I don't have much else to say other than, you know, I came back and was talking to my wife about it, and she's like me, she's an eternal optimist, and she was like, you know, it was meant to be that way, because if he had left Hendricks in longer or something like that, maybe Hendricks gives up a grand slam and they lose, you know. It was meant to be that way. So I was like, I like that perspective. I certainly agree with Ryan that Madden made some colossally bad moves, but, you know, they worked out, and hopefully he learns from that a little bit. And, you know, and the end result was, here we are, guys. So that's what I'm trying to, that's the Zen I'm trying to follow.
So I don't know if you guys have anything else, but if we do, just before we get to that, I wanted to say we might have to do a part two on this. But for the listeners, send us questions, send us comments, your feelings, your emotions, or just moments of the game of baseball that you'd want to hear more about or expand upon, because there's so much here. I think we'll definitely need a part two, and having some feedback from listeners will be good to kind of know where to go. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we've covered it really well. Isaac said in our little side chat that this has been cathartic. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think we're letting out our entire lives worth of pain and suffering on this podcast, which has gone way longer than any of us expected. But I hope that this has been enjoyable for listeners listening to this, and maybe, you know, tying into our experiences and feeling theirs at the same time. It's been really great doing this podcast with you gentlemen. This has been an amazing season, not just for us, but the podcast and professionally and the Cubs, and all of it together has been fantastic. I wanted to throw out, we have to say thank you to all of our guests that we've had. And if I miss anyone, yes, please let me know. Kat Garcia has been on a couple times, Ryan Watt, Sarah Spain of ESPN, Julia DeCaro of The Score, Matt Spiegel of The Score, Mark Grody from 670 The Score, and Zach Moser from BP Wrigleyville. I think I covered
Don't
them all.
President Obama, that one episode, he was great too.
Oh, right.
Did we not post that one?
He was podcast. Great. He was great talking about the Crosstown Classic. But yeah, that we couldn't have done it without those guys coming on and helping us out, and, you know, helping us make our podcast better. I feel like we've come a long way, and this has been fantastic to do. I don't know where it's going from here, but I feel like we're closing out this season on an all-time high.
Well said.
Yeah, and our listeners.
Awesome.
Our listeners, right? I mean, I consider many of them friends now, and so many of you reach out to us on Twitter and have reached out to us via email and just reached out to us in general. And thanks. Thank you for listening to a bunch of knuckleheads that really wax poetic about their emotions, and you allow that, and you allow Joel to be a pessimist, and you allow me to say stupid things on a regular basis and then try and defend it when I'm wrong, and all of these things. And just thanks. I we couldn't do it without you. We hope to keep growing and hope to keep everybody that's currently listening. And from our hearts to yours, we've enjoyed it. We've loved it. To you three, I've loved being on with you guys. And let's, you know what, let's just keep it rolling. Winter meetings in 4 weeks, baby.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
It's been amazing, guys. Thank you. And it's been a magical season. Don't let anyone say that it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into Wrigley Field, our heroes wear pinstripes, heroes in blue, give us the chance to feel like heroes too. Forever we'll win, and if we should lose, we know someday we'll go all the way. Yes,
someday we'll go all the way.
Hey, he did it!
We are one with the Cubs we're in love. Yeah, hold our head high as the underdogs. We are not fair weather, but foul weather fans. Like brothers in arms in the streets and the stands. There's magic in the ivy and the old scoreboard. The same when I stared at as a kid keeping score. In a world full of greed, I could never want more. And someday we'll go all the way. Teaching us faith and giving us hope. United we stand and united we'll fall. Down to our knees the day we win it all. Yeah, our name ain't said, oh, let's play tune. Or did it mean 200 years? In the same ballpark, a diamond, our jewel. The home of our joy and our tears. Traditions and wishes made new. A place where our grandfathers, fathers, they grew. A spiritual feeling if I ever knew. And if you ain't been, I am sorry for you. When the day comes for that last winning run, and I'm crying and covered in beer, I look to the sky and know I was right to think someday we'll go all the way. Yeah. Someday we'll go all the way. Yeah, 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 someday we'll go all the way.
Chicago was singing along.